Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Inatec.
No, you're working at Inatec because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million.
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world, and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Well, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do
If I had $1 million, if I had $1 million, well, I'd buy you a house. I would buy you a house. And if I
Welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom House, UJZ on the board. We have Mr. Lou Michaels. And Lou, we have I'm overrun here by lovely young ladies, which isn't so bad. Young lady named Emma Breen, who's in Peace, Justice, and Conflict Studies. Says, I want to joust with this Lou guy. I said, okay, come on in. And, S&P futures down 18.25. NASDAQ futures down 60. I seem to have a little frog in my throat, but that's okay. I'll let you guys do a lot of the talking. Lou, how are you?
I'm very good, from a snowy Denver.
Really?
Well, so we're doing okay.
This is a big shock to you. It's raining here again.
I'm pretty much convinced that you guys need to figure out a way to start shipping water west, since you've got so much of it. What's Lake Michigan up to right now?
It's up to Lake Superior and Lake Erie, those other two watersheds. Those of you who don't know, Lake Michigan and Huron are the same. They're connected. Superior is kind of on its own, and Erie and Ontario are connected, correct?
You can get through all of them.
Yeah.
You can go from Superior all the way to Montreal. Actually.
But there's a river that there's a different level of those.
Yes.
Anyway, the phenomenon is that Lake Michigan is going to be within a stone's throw of a record high. But the weird part is, just reading this last night, in 2013, it was at almost a record low.
Yeah.
So not that it's back to a record high or close to it, which it's been a few times, but it's up like 6 feet in 6 years. So the unprecedented part is how quickly it has gone from low to high. It's like going from, you know, if Lake Mead was to be like flooding 3 years from now or something.
Yeah, it's interesting to watch. I mean, I always understood that the huge factor in how low Michigan got was whether there was ice. You got enough ice over the surface in the wintertime to stop evaporation.
And that happened that one year, that really cold year.
Yeah.
Well, no, but now it's up like 2 inches in the last month with all the rain we've gotten, which is totally unprecedented.
Yeah. Like, it's up, you guys have had a lot of rain. I'm not complaining about the snow because any moisture out here suppresses the fire danger, and that's really all I care about. So,
well, plus you guys are short water anyway. You need a couple of big years for Lake Mead and some of the rest of those things.
This for Lake Mead, they're saying that there will not be a water rationing going into effect with Lake Mead. That they need that this will stop the decline, but it's not going to add. There's just been too much water loss. So yeah, they need about another 3 or 4 years of this kind of snowpack.
Well, they also, don't they fill they fill the one upstream up first, right?
Yes.
Powell. Yeah, I'm not sure why they do that, but they do. So anyway, I was driving in with the young ladies this morning, and Emma's taking this course of study. I was remembering, Lou, in Notre Dame, there was a priest named Dr. Maury Amen. How's that for a name? And he taught a class called The Economics of Nonviolence. And I was wondering, I was kind of going back and forth with Emma a little bit, I wonder if some of the same stuff they use in her classes are this. So Emma, how did you manage to make it in this one, and especially in a world that seems like we've got more and more conflict? How are you guys doing with this, managing conflicts?
I mean, it's definitely a process that's kind of
particular to the social issue that people are fighting. When you join the Peace, Justice, and Conflict Studies program, usually you have a personal passion in mind. And it depends on what you're doing. So there's a lot of, like, human trafficking work that goes on with some of my friends in the program, and that's fought a particular way through, like, resources around the city with police and the law. And
so you guys do work outside of classes. I just go there and learn about this and head back to the dorm.
Oh, 100%. That's probably what I love most about my program is there's a huge requirement for community engagement, and a lot of classes actually integrate that into the 10-week classes that you're taking each quarter, and you're, like, paired with different community projects around the city and have to, like, do a short-term internship, essentially. But it's definitely preparing you.
So the question I have is does this operate, or are your studies directed on a local level in terms of, like, neighborhood interactions, or are they directed on assessing things that are happening on an international level, or is it both? And if it's both, what lessons do you draw from you know, working locally that you can apply, or that your studies tell you can apply on an international level?
Yeah, so, I mean, it's definitely both, and that's something that each Peace, Justice, and Conflict Studies major kind of gets to choose based off what classes they're interested in. So there's a lot of, like, more political science classes that gear towards international politics and the way that that affects poverty. I was super interested in working with refugees for the first 2 years of college, and I did some work with that community, but that takes a lot of understanding international conflict and displacement and humanitarian aid, things of that nature. Now I've kind of shifted to being more interested in education, so I do a lot of more community-based work, and DePaul's very connected to the city of Chicago and all of its specific social issues as well. So it's something you can kind of tailor to what you're looking for. But lessons that you take from both aspects, I think, are super important from, like, an international perspective, having a understanding of the economics of humanitarian aid, or, you know, how to nonviolently communicate during conflict as best as you can. Like, what does that look like? How are we progressing towards more nonviolent solutions to these issues? As well as, like, from the community level, bringing, like, a person-to-person kind of perspective to it, if that makes sense.
Is there a course, Lou?
Just a question I would have, and this is something that I've wondered about, because if you ask somebody that was coming out of a military academy like me what they did, I mean, or what the ultimate goal of their purpose was, it was peace. But it's on an international level, and it's done in a different, it's got a slightly different orientation. Do you think Emma, Matt, I'll ask if I can call you Emma, since we haven't met.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Do you think that most of these international conflicts are driven by economics? Do you think they're driven by, you know, some kind of tribalism? Do you think that there are other factors that are played in, or what? I mean, if you say it's economics, and I say, okay, so there's sort of a Marxian factor there, since that Marx tends to drive all that stuff. I mean, most of us who read in this area look at a lot of the international stuff now and say it's not necessarily economics. Economics are important, but the kind of tribal motivations that arise in these areas, like, and the most recent one I'm thinking about is the Israeli-Palestinian headbutting that's been going on. You know, the tribal elements are crucial there, because, you know, it doesn't seem like either side is acting in its economic interests.
What
do you think? I mean, how do you approach that kind of thing?
Lou, can I interject on one thing before she answers? Because I'm sure she'll. But on what level are you talking? Again, like Emma, what we've been going through lately was we go through all these subjects. it's like we're doing a three-dimensional chess game. At what level? I mean, I think that on the level, let's say on the jihadist level, he might be doing it for Allah, but the guy who's telling him to do it might be doing it for economics. So there's different levels of different.
I think you can factor it in, but to get the fighters, to get the guys, to get the people who are not, you know, interested, who are going to actually do the shooting, actually do the fighting, actually do the disruption. You've got to get them into the game, and you know, my perspective is that there's a lot of similarities between what happens in some of the neighborhoods in the south side of Chicago in terms of organizing people into gangs, and the kind of international or the organization of international groups that undercut stability in places like Nigeria and other places.
Well, you know, your buddy Mike Royko said what war was. They got it. We want it. Let's take it.
I think that's probably true in play. I think that there's an element to that. I think that's true if you're talking about nation states. I think it's less true if you're talking about things like Boko Haram or ISIS or some of these others.
Well, if you go back to the Iliad? No, not the Iliad. The one where the Helen of Troy.
That's the Odyssey and the Iliad.
Yeah, Emma, have you ever read those back in the?
Yes.
I know you have. I'm asking Emma.
I haven't.
But it basically was a guy came over and stole the most beautiful woman from the king in Greece and hustled her back to Troy. And everybody went over there and fought this romantic war to get essentially Helen of Troy back. Well, I don't know if many of the guys were doing that. That's why they were fighting. But the real fight was about trade rights, right? Right, Lou? It had nothing to do with some good-looking girl. I don't think people were really dying for that, but maybe they were. I don't know. Anyway, go ahead and answer the question. Am I rudely interrupted?
Yeah, no problem. So, I mean, I definitely think there's, to me at least, it seems like it is rooted in some sort of, like, economic problem, whether that be, like, purely monetary or just the scarcity of resources. And I think the way that kind of, like, tribalism, which is an interesting perspective that I've been hearing, like, more and more about recently, I think the way, like, tribalism kind of is coupled with that idea of economics is, like, because of our history of solving conflict in this way. And I'm wondering if it's almost, like, such a socialized part of how we attempt to solve these issues, whether it's economic or scarcity or just, I mean, throughout history, a lot of it was, like, the nationalism and, like, what your nation is, like, teaching its people, and that can be good, that can be bad, depending on the situation. But I think both a bit of economics, I think economics is the root. Resources are the root. If you're taken care of and secure and okay, I don't think you have a huge reason to fight other than maybe those, like, religious extremists and whatever. But, yeah, I think that tribal nature is kind of something that's, like, been a part of the way human beings take care of their people for so, so long that it's definitely a fight to kind of change the nature of that.
Did you ever read a book called, Lou, I don't know if you have either, a book called Catastrophe?
Mm-mm.
And actually it was a big, I think it was the History Channel or somebody did it. Anyway, some guy, this guy, talking about Southside, he was doing, talk about research, Lou, the guy'd be at somebody's house in Britain, and he, you know, drinking wine or beer or whatever the hell you drink over there. And evidently one of the big things people have for furniture are big slices out of tree trunks, and then they stain them, and they're, you know, very valuable and blah, blah, blah. But if you have one of these, massive old trees, well, the guy starts to notice in the tree, you know, 4 or 5 inches in from the end, the tree rings, the rings that, I guess, grow every year, I'm not a botanist of any sort, all of a sudden were very narrow. So one thing leads to another, leads to another, leads to another, and the guy starts doing all this research, and evidently somewhere back in the day, when did the Muslim religion start? Was it like 500 AD?
600, 630.
Yeah, somewhere in there
is when Muhammad reached Mecca.
Okay, somewhere in there, that era, this guy went back and where all the written texts you could get all around the world, he found that there was a huge cataclysmic problem earthwise, and it got much colder. And that's when essentially all the castles in Europe, instead of being built on the you know, on the plain where people could grow stuff, were built near the water where you could fish for stuff. And he basically went through every single place in the world where people were at the time, and there was just a momentous change. People in Russia that were horse dominated societies, all of a sudden they lost out to the cattle dominated societies because cattle can last a lot longer in a drought than a horse. You know, blah blah blah. And they eventually.
If I remember my reading correctly, it was either Tambora or one of the other big volcanic explosions in Indonesia that caused that.
Yeah, it was underwater, and the thing blew water up into the atmosphere and dust for like, you know, months, and it totally darkened the atmosphere for a period of like 20 years. So that's when, you know, Richard the Lion or King Arthur's group fell apart. everything that was written at the time all changed, but the bottom line was it also caused the Roman Empire to go under because it allowed the bubonic plague to move out of. There was a whole chapter in there about species of rats and how the rats finally made it. The bubonic plague essentially made it to the water, and it got on the ships and it destroyed the Roman Empire. Well, Muhammad's father had a bunch of dough, so people essentially had to listen to the kid because the old man was ponying up stuff, and because the Roman Empire was falling apart, the Muslim religion became this very, shall we say, aggressive. We're not only going to have a religion, we're going to conquer other people and make them our religion as well. And it essentially was written during this time. And that's where you get the very secular overtones, the part about it's not just whether people believe, but they should be made to believe, that kind of thing. All came out of like this era where there really wasn't enough to go around. And the book really makes a fantastic study of this whole thing. And I'm kind of surprised that your class isn't digging into this one. I mean, it'd be fascinating to read because essentially it was a religion designed for the times.
Yeah.
Well, Emma's looking at refugee studies.
Yep.
And local effects. So that sounds to me like it sounds to me like her focus, and she can tell us, but her focus is more sort of a local, you know, how do we avoid conflict and de-escalate conflict at a local level. Am I wrong?
Definitely more so now. Yeah, I would say my freshman and sophomore year, I was a little more interested in like refugee crisis, which we do kind of talk about that. I feel like it's hard to kind of create boundaries around these subjects where we're specifically talking about aggressive extremists and trying not to like talk about a religion as a whole. So I know like there's that, how do we go about like making sure we're not painting a picture in our heads that's like overgeneralizing more, and how do we like uncover like an accurate amount of information? Do you know what I mean?
I think so. Yeah, I agree with you. So I was just going to ask you if you don't mind, because this area is obviously of interest to me. You're in a world, or you're working in a world that I read a lot about. What do you think the effects are, or are we managing the effects of, you know, a massive influx of people who are not like us? To use a generic term, either whether it's the immigration that you saw, the mass migration we saw in the Middle East, from the Middle East into Europe over the last, you know, I don't know, 5-6 years, or what's happening on our southern border right now with people pouring in, you know, how does that impact the culture, and what does the culture do to deal with those kinds of inherent conflicts where you've got, you know, an other coming into your neighborhood?
So you're talking about like more of like my community, the Chicago community, how we're like, how we're handling it, or?
Right. Or how do you, what are your studies? You were talking about, you've moved kind of now to a more local impact in education.
Yeah.
And things like that. What do you think about that kind of an issue? Is there a way of dealing with it? Does your teachers talk to you about how you assimilate populations like that, or deal with them when they come into your culture?
Yeah, absolutely. So actually, how I became more interested in the community level of like social issues is I did two internships at a refugee resettlement agency on the northwest side. It's in Albany Park, Rogers Park area, called World Relief. And there's a couple agencies, they're like tied to the federal government, so they're usually in like big cities, and there's some in Wheaton, Illinois. There's some like other places in the country, obviously, but there's definitely people on the ground working here full-time for these resettlement agencies, where they try to staff as many translators as they can. We're giving both the adults and the kids like ESL classes, trying to get them after-school help. One of my internships was like running the after-school program for like refugee kids, and just like trying to give them a sense of community. And you know, there's workers there that are tasked with getting, you know, you have like a 3-month stipend, I believe, and it depends on how big your refugee family is or who's moving where, but you get a stipend for a little bit of rent. They try to get you some you know, maybe like factory job or something of that nature, where they can just start working as soon as possible.
Emma, is it somewhat similar to the Ellis Island model, where if you have relatives in a town, you go to that town and people speak for you? If you have anybody here that is willing to help you out, they find the person, and is it somewhat the same?
You know what? I definitely think you can apply. I think there's like some sort of the system where like you can try to make that happen. Unfortunately, I didn't run into a lot of families that knew one another beforehand. I mean, a lot of people from the same area, like they're in on the northwest side, there's a lot of like Rohingya people, Syrian people, a lot of people that came from the first place they migrated to, which is Turkey. So there's sort of a communal vibe, and they definitely form friendships and communities based off where they came from. But I didn't run into a whole lot of, oh, my sister came here a year ago or things like that.
Where Audrey lives down in Orland, it's a, you know, I don't know the numbers, but it seems like there's a large Arab, I'm guessing Saudi, but I don't know.
Yeah.
Population, and I've never seen, you know, I don't go into the schools or anything, but I've never seen assimilation at that rate. Kids are all running around with cell phones. They all want to play sports. I mean, it looks to me like the American way of life is somewhat addictive. I don't know. That's what I'm seeing. I mean, it's one area.
It can be. You can look at that, or you can go up into Minneapolis where my brother is an EMT, and my sister lives, and you can see a very insular Somali community that is doing exactly the opposite. You know, they are working hard to insulate their children from the what they consider to be the ravages of Western culture.
Well, I think that happens kind of in any group. My grandfather was one of these that obviously he's from Italy. He refused to live in an Italian neighborhood. They lived in Inglewood, which was very disparate. And he refused to have Italian spoken at home. We're in America now. Yet all kinds of other, in Chicago, you know, there's Polish communities, or even Italian communities, where most of the old people now don't speak English. So, I mean, it's kind of a choice you can make. I'm not so sure one's right or wrong, but the kids seem to bust out of either area and then do pretty well, it seems to me. I mean, maybe
We're not seeing that in a number of communities where you've got, and this is another issue for Emma, where you've got very strong cultural or religious, and in many cases there's no difference, cultural or religious prohibitions and strictures that work. And those communities, well, at least I could say about the Somali community in Minneapolis, is having, by choice, a very difficult time getting into the Western culture. They're not interested in assimilating because the Western culture is inimical to their own culture,
okay.
And it varies, I think, by the willingness of the people to, you know, to break down some of their ties and say, okay, or some of their beliefs and say, okay, I'll adopt this for the purposes of either working or getting along or whatever.
Well, just a quick story. I'd sold this, house to this, Saudi lady, and she's, and, you know, I'm not recommending it, but she doesn't do the burqa thing anymore, and of course she's officially banned from the family. Shunned is the Amish thing, right? I don't know, whatever it is, she's out. And, so, Ut sells a place to one of the brothers, and she says the brothers are secretly so proud of her, and so is the mother, and the dad's coming around. So.
I mean, it's a process, but yeah, that's the kind of thing you're seeing. I mean, in any event, that goes back to some of the, you know, those kinds of cultural clash issues are in some cases the kind of thing that I look at and say, all right, that, you know, that's a motivator. That's the rallying point, if you will, for somebody who may be perfectly happy to get as much money as they want or as many resources as they want. But that's the rallying point that gets you your fighters, that gets you your shooters, that gets you the people that are going to do the taking, if you want to put it that way.
Lou, hold that thought, buddy. We're going to go to break, and when we come back, we've got to talk a little bit about this China situation, and is that conflict, can we solve it? S&P futures down 1950, NASDAQ futures down 64, another down day. We'll be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTIsecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTIsecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of HomeSource Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice-weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. She's Emma Breen. She's Jay-Z. He's Mr. What is your name again? Lou Michaels, the S&P futures, down 19, NASDAQ futures down 64. I'm so tired of doing these downs in the morning here, but, by the way, it's worked out very well for my people. I was able to, a couple spots where I was short calls in the money, I've been able to roll. So, I mean, these last few days that we've been down, everything is broke fine for my guys, but, it's still not good to say that we've still run the market at least steady rather than down. Dow's down 160 points. Over in Europe, kind of whack here a little bit too. DAX down 82, that's 0.7%. FTSE hanging in, they're only down 13.2%. CAC around down over 1 though, 59.33, it's 1.1%. Over in Asia, Nikkei down another 200, it's another percent. Shanghai down 42, that's another 1.5%. Now it's down to 2,900, 2,850. Again, this thing rallied all year, the second part. From really February on, the Shanghai did nothing but rally. Now it's going down every day. Hang Seng down 692. That's 2.4%. Ouch on that. Oil, very steady. Down 4 cents. Brent up 19 cents. RBOB gas, $1.98. So it's down from the 215 that it was. Natural gas, 259, down a penny. We've got gold up $3, 1284. Gold can't seem to get out. You would think that gold would be going up with all this mess, but it's not. Copper the same way, 276. So if you're somebody who thinks the price of copper is something to let you know how things are going in China, well, it ain't going so hot if you're looking at copper, because you like to see a copper over $3. It's not even close. Jay-Z, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports? I'll hit you up with the weather. It's raining.
Thanks for that. I appreciate it. Anyway, good morning, everyone. The time is now 6:37. Chicago weather today has rain most of the day. High of 69, low 43. Phoenix is clear with a high of 91. Low of 64. In baseball, the Cubs beat the Marlins 3-2. White Sox lost to the Indians 5-3. And the Diamondbacks beat the Rays 3-2. In traffic, there is a disabled vehicle. The left lane is blocked on Lakeshore Drive going north at North Ave. Nothing else. Back to you.
What do you mean nothing else? We've got how many rivers are in flood? 14 gauges. Only 11 yesterday in flood.
Yeah, well, it's not blocking out of the road.
So as long as it's not up to the ninth floor where we are, it's okay. Is that
exactly.
What you're saying?
Or in my basement.
Yes, or in your basement. Emma, Lou, what do you... We have this Chinese thing going on, back and forth. Right now, we're not doing the fourth, we're doing the back today. Trump has claimed that they've reneged on everything we thought we had arranged. But we're still talking. So, I mean, the market is down, but I would say everybody who's trading the market, either for themselves or for other people like I do, is going to be very wary of some kind of upside surprise here. So both of you, the both of you are very good at this conflict stuff. How do you separate? I mean, just watching this maybe for the first time, Emma, or the first few times that You know, because you're not. It's not like you're as ancient as the two of us. This has to be fascinating for you. The constant threats back and forth. The constant. I mean, it's a negotiating style. I'm not so sure it's been. Probably has been the Chinese style for a while, and now it's our guy's style. I mean, this is sort of fascinating to watch. And there's undertones of threats. There's undertones of violence. There's undertones all over the place. I mean, what do you? I mean, I doubt if you guys are trying to get your hands around something this big in class yet, but what do you see just by, you know, kind of looking at it, just the people involved? Emma?
I mean, just to see, I'm most familiar with the way President Obama, just because of how old I am, I'm most familiar with his style of, like, foreign affairs, and he was never this aggressive. And I cannot, well, at least in my knowledge and growing up and what I heard, to have this kind of opposite perspective on it, it's a little scary to, like, see. Like, it's not something that I'm used to or that I particularly would imagine would be effective in this sort of situation. And, you know, I study how to be nonviolent and how to avoid, you know, tension and these types of things. So I'm not going to pretend I know the ins and outs of what's being said right now in negotiation, but it does come off as a little frightening.
Lou, I got a question, maybe Emma can opine as well, but I brought the subject up yesterday, and I just kind of lobbed one out there with Carl, and it's interesting to me that you can say that Clinton, Bush, Obama ignored all these issues, and that Trump has basically the stones to address people. And that would be an argument. I'm not so sure it's not the right argument, to be honest with you. That's what I'm asking. Or not. Or what I brought up yesterday was maybe the other guys might have just been laziness, might have just been lack of stones, who knows. But it also might be they never thought they could really be successful without the rest of the world kind of on your side. It's very difficult to do these things one-off. I mean, when we had... I mean, one of the successful things I ever saw, even though I'm not a war guy, was, you know, Bush won in a fight against Saddam. I mean, we had everybody in the world on our side. We didn't have to worry about any of that stuff. I mean, everybody kicked in a few people or a few tanks or a few planes, and it was pretty much him against, you know, the Armageddon coming down his throat. I mean, he couldn't go find an ally. He couldn't do anything. So, I mean, and I wonder if in retrospect, which we'll never know, if getting rid of the Trans-Pacific Agreement, which China was not a party to, was the proper strategy. Maybe the strategy was to try and get China into that agreement, because most of the stuff we're talking about, I think, was already in that agreement. We'll never know, Lou, but I get the feeling that in the world these days, if you don't have your partners about you, people don't... I mean, we see this guy in Iran now basically flipping us off, because he knows we don't have enough people. We've got us and Israel. You know, I mean,
Let me address a couple of things. First of all, what happened apparently with China is that we thought we had agreements with them on a number of key legal issues that they were, or key legal changes they were going to make in their own laws to put teeth into the trade issues that we have with them, the copyright protection, the theft of intellectual property, all that. For some reason, and this is what's reported in the journal today, they believed that we had suddenly showed a willingness to compromise. When they saw that, when their negotiating team saw that, they reneged on all of these things that we thought we had agreement on. And that came in the form of a red line document that was sent back to us, back to our negotiating team last Friday, where they just basically tried to rewrite everything that we had put in place. That, in my world, because I negotiate a lot of settlement agreements and lawsuits and things like that, that in my world is called bad faith negotiating. And it triggered a response by our people, which was, okay, fine. We're now back to square one. These guys aren't negotiating in good faith. We are going to pull the trigger and just up the ante because we can. That's our negotiating move. I think that's probably the way to deal with the Chinese in terms of what, you know, the way they look at the world. We are not going to, and we're kidding ourselves, I think, if we believe that this particular process is going to somehow lessen what the Chinese believe is their right or their perception of their right to expand their influence throughout Asia, and to do it in a militarily aggressive way. And I mean, just because I believe that's their mindset.
I'm 100% in agreement with you. You're not supposed to do on radio, but I'm 100% with you.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that's gonna subvert that. China is looking at itself as a great power now, and wants its place, its quote place at the table, which means, by the way, oh yeah, we're gonna take Taiwan, we're going to neuter Japan, we're going to, you know, do everything we can to set it up so that if we get into a pushing contest with the United States Navy in the Pacific, we're going to be able to effectively defang it, or at least stop it from doing the kinds of things that it wants to do with respect to our territorial and political ambitions. This treaty, this tariff negotiation, this trade negotiation, is a microcosm of what's playing out in the South China Sea and in the Western Pacific. And that's not going to stop anytime soon.
I would agree, Lou. They're absolutely together. And I'm not so sure why, on this end, the people reporting this, I've never heard what you just said on TV, and to me, it's exactly true. This is all together.
I think it's not being said on TV because the focus is on Russia and the crazy, well, don't get me started on the whole issue with the president and the kind of craziness that he inspires in his opponents. But I think what you're seeing playing out right now is the same kind of thing you saw play out with the Iran deal, which I thought was an abomination in terms of how it was negotiated. But that is the president saying, look, we've still got a lot of power and a lot of economic and soft power, and we're going to use it, because we're dealing with people who are not interested in trying to coexist peacefully with us. They are interested in pushing and getting as much as they can. And it's running up against our interests, our national interests.
But, Louis, we're not, as long as you have 15 countries in the world that we have not done the homework like Bush 1 did and get them on board for something with Iran, we're the one who pulled out of this thing. I'm not criticizing the person. I'm just saying, in terms of style, right now we have zero. The chances of us putting those guys down on oil to zero, if the Russians, the Germans, the Italians, anybody on Earth, the Martians, are more than willing to buy it, is zero. We're not going to bomb all those people.
No, we're not. But we have other levers that we can use of soft power that can make life very difficult for the Iranians.
But I'm saying our levers get weaker and weaker the more we go it alone.
That to a certain extent that's true, but you know, the best power lever that we have is economic strength.
Right.
And as our economy booms along here,
if it's booming along, depending on who you believe, go ahead.
Well, I mean, as the economy booms along here, it gives a president a lot of options with respect to things like banking practices and international monetary transfers and things like that.
That's true.
And, I mean, that's what you're seeing, I think.
Well, I guess where I'm going with this is, if we'll talk more after the break, but and we'll get Emma involved, but there's no doubt that if Germany wants oil, they can do a barter system. We can only do what we want alone on the other side of the world. I mean, you're right, we're powerful, but we're more powerful together. Bush 1 understood that.
I absolutely agree with that. But what you're seeing in this particular president and the people
all
around
him. We've got to hang on to that, Lou. We've got to go to break.
Okay,
S&P futures down 18. NASDAQ futures down 61. Not going much up to the upside here. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks. Markets close to all-time highs. Interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous. No return on cash balances. May have some invested a little too much for comfort. Some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, if they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed.
PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with Jan Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters. The Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice-weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control. Right here, right now, right here.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Ouch. She's Miss Emma Brain. She's Jay-Z on the board. He is Mr. Lou Michaels. S&P Futures right here, down 18 and a quarter. NASDAQ Futures down 62. Individual stocks in the down. Everybody's down. There isn't one up. But nobody, there doesn't seem to be a big hitter. Boeing's down $1.80, but nothing horrible. There's nobody down like $5 or $6. So it's just across the board here this morning, I think, just because the S&Ps are down. Lou, you know, the part about this treaty, and as you know, you've been on the show with me a long time. I never thought that the part about intellectual property was going to fly. I mean, I don't know. It caused people to, first of all, admit to something they were never going to admit to. But I just don't see how. I mean, you're the attorney. If you and I had whatever it is. Suppose we had the Stocks and Jacks concealed carry hoodie, right? And the Chinese wanted it, and they said, "We'll sell it over here to a billion Chinese people." But by the way, you've got to give me the plans for the hoodie. For a billion hoodies, I might go ahead and do it, because who cares if somebody gets the concealed carry hoodie? Now, it's probably not right for them to ask it, but you can ask whatever you want for it, Lou. And maybe it's not right for me to give it, but if I sit there and go, hey, look, if I sell these things to a million Chinese people, I'm retired anyway. I can give a rat's behind about these hoodies. That's sort of my decision. I don't know how on this end we ever tried to put that as part of Chinese law. Where, to me, again, the South Side knucklehead that I am, I would just say, let's put a list up, and Emma, I'd like your opinion, of 200 things we don't want going to these guys. By the way, you guys can't give them the plans to that. The rest of the stuff, we don't care. But this one, no, Boeing, you don't get to give them the wing design that happens to be the same as, whatever, Air Force One.
You can't give that to these guys, no matter how many planes they buy. I mean, I really thought the whole thing was misdirected. Laura, am I totally wrong on this or what?
We do initially and have all kinds of trade limitations through a regime called ITAR that limit the ability of U.S. companies to sell certain goods and certain technology. But all the basic manufacturing technology, all the software for controlling intelligent machines, that kind of stuff, you know, some of that's restricted, but almost very little of it is, and that's what they pirated that. They pirated,
but in their mind, they bought it.
Well, no, what they did
some of it.
And what they did was they bought into it, but in most cases, they simply copied it and then redistributed it. They didn't have permission to do it.
I'm not standing up for them. What I'm saying is, I don't see how it's enforceable on that end. If it's enforceable at all, it's enforceable on this end.
Well, we enforce it through trade requirements that say you've got to have these kinds of enforcement mechanisms in place, and you've got to use them. And if you don't, we turn the spigot off.
All right, well, walk me through. I know I'm being very anal on this, but walk me through this. We've got a copier. We want to sell copiers in China. They go, if you want to sell copiers in China, we need the plans for the copier. And by the way, you can only be 49% owner, which, you know, I don't think is right, Lou. But and I say, go ahead. I'll do that because it's worth so much to me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't necessarily see a copier being a national security thing. Maybe there's a chip in there that I don't know about that's actually smarter than I think it is. I don't know. Maybe I should know. But I don't see how that becomes something we can count on Chinese law to do. I mean, go ahead.
The copier analogy is where we have sold that to them. As part of the deal is one situation, but the situation where we sell them, you know, aircraft, or we sell them imaging technology, and we just sell the technology, we just sell the machines, and then they take the machines and reverse engineer them and start copying them and producing them by the gross.
Right.
That's what was going on over there.
I understand. I'm not standing up for anybody. What I'm saying is, some of the stuff you hear people say, to me, makes no sense. I've heard people on TV say stuff like, and I'm gonna believe it or not, I've heard people say, if they come over and buy a company here, we should have no right to stop, you know, lose company from being sold to the Chinese. But then we have a right to say the Chinese can't, like, look into this room and see how does somebody buy a place and then not buy? We're trying to have our cake and eat it too, I think, Lou, is what I guess I'm getting to here.
I think what you saw with the Chinese in terms of economic competition is very much what we saw with the Russians in terms of military competition back
Correct.
In the 70s.
I would agree.
We thought that they would come up to a certain level and then stop and say, okay, it's time for us to play by the rules the rest of the world plays by, and we're gonna start enforcing our own IP protections, and we're going to start playing, you know, with the rest of the world appropriately. The Russians didn't. We thought the Russians would do the same thing with regard to their strategic nuclear forces in the 70s. It didn't happen in either case. In either case, both parties took our acquiescence in their growth as an indication of either weakness, which I think is how they looked at it, weakness or ineffectiveness. And said, you know what? We can grab as much as
well, why
we want.
Why do people
keep on grabbing?
Let me ask you this, and this is I'll ask Emma because she's a conflicts resolution. Why do people think that way? I knew people on the trading floor that got firms that got big because they cheated, and now that they're big, they still cheat. Why would I ever think, as my mother used to say, that leopard would change his spots? Emma,
I'll let Emma answer.
Why would I ever think that when they got big enough, they'd go to see the penguin like Belushi, and the light would shine on them? Well, they cheat now that they're big, and now they cheat better because they're big.
Yeah, I mean, I think money and power is super addictive, like any other drug. And once you get a taste of that, and you feel like that is your purpose, or that's what you're doing now, or you know. At least coming from a place maybe where you didn't have those things, I feel like it's super easy in any facet of life to just, like, narrow your sights on the materialism and the power and, yeah, just get lost in it.
Yeah, but
Let me piggyback on what Emma just said, because she just touched on something I think very important. And I've seen this with clients that I've dealt with over and over again. And that is, when you get big and you get and things are going your way and you're making money hand over fist, you think that not only are you a brilliant businessman, but you begin to think that you're a morally superior, you know, that you've got some kind of moral superiority that's attached to this. Yeah. Because of
did it all on your success. Own, did it all on your own, hold yourself up by your bootstraps, walk back
and
forth.
It's not even that. It's that I'm entitled to this because I'm smarter or bigger or whatever. And you take your pick the company, pick Microsoft, pick the National Football League, pick AOL, and the word I think we're looking for is hubris.
Yes.
And it attaches in that situation. You begin to think that this is mine and that I've got there's a moral element to my success, and that what I've been doing is right. And if it wasn't, then I wouldn't be having all the success. It's a very Calvin, that was the genius of Calvinism as a religion. Yeah. You know, it's a very Calvinistic approach to the way you view your success in the economy, your economic success. And Emma's exactly right. That permeates an organization, and it affects the decision making of the people at the top.
You guys aren't supposed to be agreeing; you're supposed to be jousting.
Well, I mean,
Lou,
touched on that.
Yes, she did.
That's crucial,
Lou. We'll see you next week. We might have Emma back when you're here. You guys are you don't even need me. S&P futures down 21. S&P futures down 70. We're getting worse, if anything. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jocks, Mr. Fari Harmsey.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at PTISecurities.com, or feel free to email me at john@PTISecurities.com. That's JOHN at PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices, along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. She's Miss Emma Breen. She's Jessica Zalewski. SP Futures down on 21. NASDAQ Futures down 70. Fari, boy, I hope you like it down in Florida, but if you were here this morning, I'd have you surrounded with two blondes.
Good morning. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I'm surrounded by two blondes this morning. If you were here and brought breakfast, you would, you know, you could meet these
can
wonderful...
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Can you hear
me? Okay, now I can. Okay, I couldn't hear you before.
Jesus.
Chief, we should be moving to Skype.
Skype.
We got to stop staying in this 19th century stuff.
You can use Skype and come in through that?
Yeah, look at Dr. Joe.
You can maybe get a...
Elkland on Benzinga, they use a Skype. It is incredible quality.
You also could
very
do some...
Very crisp, and also you can share charts.
Well, you
know, live,
but
right
you,
there.
You can come in with Skype. You also could use something new called a landline.
Jesus Christ. There are no landlines left. Come on.
Well, I mean, if you had one, they work fine. By the way, you're old enough.
No, everything here is DSL. Nobody has landlines. You got to go on VoIP. Down here, everything is VoIP.
If you call up your guy and tell him you're over 65 and you need one, they'll give you one.
Oh, Jesus.
Just saying.
I'm glad I'm not.
There you go. Hey, what's going on
here? What's going on?
How many days are we going to go down here? And then
I went short over the weekend, and I closed night before last, and yesterday said you're okay. Today it says no, you're not okay.
Yeah.
I guess we got more volume than we expected. Part of it is a bunch of stuff. I mean, China stuff is not working. Tax issues with New York AG, that's a big one, I think. And then Senate comes in, subpoenas, comes in the Senate intelligence, comes in subpoenas Don Jr.
Really? I didn't see that.
You didn't know that? That was last night. So, it's, you know, I don't know what else to expect here other than, hey, we were really overbought Friday, okay? And price and volume says, hey, you know, pay attention to me. And we did. Now, are we going to be right all the time? No. But if you look at Tyler, I just last 8 years, I'm number one. So,
well, Fari,
it's close enough for
during, me. During the day, I mean, you know, for my people, thank God, I've got everybody protected. So I've got puts on everything, okay? So it's if we go flying down, it won't be the best thing in the world, but it won't be horrible either. But my consciously, all I'm thinking of doing is a couple spots. Well, first of all, but since I have people's money in a bunch of different indices, okay? The indices have been so uneven, Fari. I mean, the Russell, everything's fine. I'm making a few bucks on the covered calls. It hasn't gone anywhere. I'm talking about since like the middle of January. It's up a little bit. Now the Qs, I'm chasing like the dog after the rabbit. But now all of a sudden,
or a couple of new bones.
Yeah. Now this week I've been able to roll everything up and everything's kind of fine. So this has been a really good week for me. But I'm saying the difference between the performance of the Dow and the Russell and the QQQs, it was very concentrated, just like before the last quarter of last year. And the more concentrated it gets, it's hard to know the timing, but you just have to worry more and more. But today, I mean, I think that with the market doing this and looking like lower and lower,
I would say that there's a chance of a surprise one way or the other. I'm going to say the surprise to the upside has got to be 75%, that somebody will declare victory or the Chinese are our friends again or something. I mean, most people are thinking that way. And if you're listening during the day or watching like you are, I mean, you sit there and you take a sip of coffee and the spoos run up 8 points. Or they run down 8 points. And you're looking to see what tweet's going on somewhere.
I agree. Listen, it's not, you know, we complain when there's no traffic and there's order flow. And it doesn't move. And you know, it's like feels like, hey, is it summer is already here? And then you get to, then we get to a point where it moves so much, you know, by 11 o'clock Eastern time, I'm just exhausted.
Yeah.
Completely exhausted. Yeah. And I need to take a long launch. You know what that is out here, right? In Trumpkin land, so.
Well, I was looking at the, for those that don't know.
It's three things I look at all the time, okay? Constantly. Apple, Microsoft, and Amazon. These tells me what this, the NDX is doing.
Yep.
Spoos is far more difficult. A, you have 500 names, so you have less concentration. They say the electronic electronic version, you know, the ES and NQ, are mimicking what the floor used to do because it's dominated by people who came from the floor. Okay.
Well, the only difference
went upstairs and called trading. They called trading upstairs. These guys left the floor in the pit because the pit closed. I went upstairs, but it's the same almost pattern. And what you see, in my humble opinion, on the ES, and especially ES, is that it constantly goes back and forth, okay? It constantly goes back and forth, and it does it like a backfill. It goes back and forth. Feels come back.
The difference, Fari, is that you can't see the whites of their eyes, and nobody has confidence enough to leave standing orders.
True.
So there's a big difference between the electronic and the floor. Big difference.
True. That's one. Yes. And you also see, it's a good point, on those standing orders, you see why it changes so much. I mean,
yeah, nobody's there. Nobody's there.
It's changing on you. And so, you know, what are you going to do? So.
Well, I mean, there were orders on the trading floor, and then there were orders.
Right.
And by the, if normally somebody comes in to buy, I'll say corn, okay?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And you come in and there's standing orders, so the public takes some and the market makers take some and blah, blah. And it's kind of ebbs and flows. So even a big order, if it's just a nondescript order, is not going to move anything. But now if you've got if Beeks is out there and you know the crop report's coming out, and all of a sudden the guy who's known to be the inside trading sleazy firm comes flying in 2 seconds before the crop report with a huge order, that's going to get a different reaction. Everybody's going to back off on that guy like you know, it's like it's a snake, right? Mm-hmm. So I mean there's a lot to be said for the crowd being able to discipline the sleaze bags a little bit. Electronically you can't discipline anybody. I mean,
yes.
If it's a sleazy order, you don't know it from a regular order. And by the way, if you're counting on the government to watch for you, good luck with that.
Well, on electronic, listen, they couldn't even watch the pit. Right?
No. Well, you didn't have to because
every two or three big guys had one inspector. I mean, if you went to a spoos pit, the right at the rails, you couldn't get in to see the pit because they're all filled up by inspectors. With the badges on, and if you would come in and stand there, or already they push you out,
well,
and say, "What are you doing?"
You didn't need inspectors because as long as it was open out, you didn't need inspectors. As long as it was open outcry, people police it themselves. Hey, that's my trade. I was cheaper. I was bid higher.
On the spoos, there were inspectors. Senor, I got interviewed by one of them.
Really?
Because he looked at my badge. He says, "What are you doing here?" No, they were. Trust me, they were. Big traders had inspector watching them, including cameras. Spoos had 26 cameras around it. Watching 500 people, okay?
That was very late. It was very late in the day.
Few people only, because those are the ones with high number of trades, okay? And that also was disputed. It was called out trades. You come in the morning. This was a trick, okay? Let me give you a quick lesson there. This was a trick. They would leave 5, 10, 15, 20 contracts of the biggest spoos, $500 point, on at night. If it won in the morning, okay? I mean, this is a guy who trades 2,000, 3,000 contracts, okay? But he leaves 10, 15 extra, okay? okay? It's baked for breakfast next day, trust me. Comes in the morning at the Merck Club on the river. If it was the winners, he accepted. Okay, that's fine. Let's catch him. Let's go for a great breakfast. And by the way, lunch we're doing over there. Okay, fine.
Sorry, I can tell you in the OEX pit,
in the OEX pit, happened so many times they brought the inspectors.
Well, I'll tell you what, in the OEX pit, you would have gotten away with that once.
Yeah, I would believe you, yes. Yeah. SIBO always had more discipline. Also, look at dollar values. I don't know if it's a fair assessment. Maybe you can tell me. I bet you the dollar value was so much bigger back and forth that Merck said probably, okay, we can survive a little bit. But I think Wodica is more disciplined.
SIBO, a little bit
smaller exchange, and more like along like Amazon, where early days of Amazon. Extreme discipline. Why? Because your margin's so thin, you don't have much room, you know, to... I mean, I don't know if you noticed it or not, with Amazon, they have given more leeway. You know why? AWS.
Well, let's put it this way.
They have some margins down. In the older days, you had a problem with Amazon. They'll try to listen to what you got to say. But you really, really have to prove your point
before
they'll help you out.
Your livelihood did not depend necessarily on your account, although you had to be positive to trade. It depended on people's willingness to trade with you.
True.
So that was way more important than your equity.
Well, right now, yes. But now you don't have that. You don't see who's trading with you.
No, and that's what's a problem.
Yeah.
I mean, matter of fact,
I agree with you.
Somebody... Nobel Prize winner Milton Friedman, somebody asked him in class, why out of the blue?
Oh, Milton, uh-huh.
So, somebody asked him in class one day, what about insider trading?
You were a student, right?
Yeah, I was a student. I was young.
Bravo, uh-huh. That's how you got your smarts. I can see. Okay, go ahead.
Somebody said, what about insider trading? He said, just let it go. The industry will police itself. But he also knew at the time, everything was open outcry, and you traded with the guy next to you.
It's just like in 2008, you mean?
Yeah, no,
sounds like the arguments that Greenspan was saying, and Ayn Rand, you know, capitalism will police itself. Yeah, sure.
Well, but when you're in the same room, it does.
No, I understand that. Yeah. I understand. Yeah.
I mean, if you ran in 2 seconds before IBM...
In our chat room, we had to ask a few people to go.
Well,
politely and quietly. They won't embarrass them, but you know, they're BSing.
Let's put
it can't be true.
You might if Farihamzi ran.
I mean,
runs
see a field that doesn't exist.
Yeah.
It didn't trade there, especially on options. Okay, options got several parameters. If it's not there, what are you claiming?
Well,
come on, be quiet. Get out of here.
But if you
don't
ran into the
well,
if you ran into the IBM pit 2 seconds before earnings, and you came in and knew the earnings and cleaned everybody out for a chunk, the next earnings, if you ran in the same 2 seconds before, you might see Farihamzi flying out of the pit. And Emma wondering about nonviolence. I mean,
yeah.
She might say that was an appropriate response. So I don't know, but I mean, it was different because you could see, you knew the firms that were slimy. And you know what had to happen. One of the phenomena, Ferry, is if you were one of the, I'm not accusing the firm necessarily, but they would take on what they used to be called fast money before the show, they'd call fast money. So you'd see Lehman. Would be the firm you had to watch out for a while. But the customers got so demanding that they might want to do a 1,000 lot. And in a crowd that maybe wasn't that big, Lehman may have to take the other side of half of that. So Lehman didn't care if the crowd got spanked. But when they started getting spanked too, they'd say, we don't want this client anymore. He's costing us more than the commissions.
Yes.
So then the next week, the guy would be the Morgan Stanley client. Cause they'd try him for a while, him or her. And then finally, they'd end up on the wrong end, right? And then, so these people moved around from company to company, and always was, hey, we do 50,000 contracts a week, and everybody's eyes light up. You know, well, a buck a throw, that's a lot of money. But at the end of the week, you lost 80 grand trading with them. Guess what? You're down. So the industry sort of did police them, but they were always usually able to find a place, at least for a while.
Yeah. Well, I won't mention any names, but there were a number of option advisors. One of them actually was... You know, was brought to my attention by your brother that you guys were also employed. These guys had huge, huge email lists.
Right.
Okay. But never had any winning trades.
No.
Much. I mean, you know, once in a while they'll have winning trades. One firm had 14 different strategies. Well, if you have 14 strategies and shooting a number, let's say, a trade every other day, once in a blue moon, you're going to get a winner.
Well, what they do is they, we know who we're talking about.
Yeah, and then that, they take that one and make an email and go out to their million plus list they have because they went to every show, and also they were with Option Express, they were with you guys, they were with Secret Swim, they were with what was the place in Florida? I forget.
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
They would run down there. Oh, Options King, I think.
Yes.
They would go to that. So they had all these lists, and then they showcased that one winning strategy that won that week. Well, next week would be another strategy because out of the 10, 14, 15 position, you know, trades you send out on a different strategy, one of them is going to win. One of them, the strategy to work, whether it's a color spread, put spread, you know, using calendars, whatever it is, it works. And the problem what happened was, and they had huge followers, obviously, because of that, and but a lot of churning. Well, for example, Option Express, I understand at the beginning, saying, I was a newcomer. I said, well, you have no following.
Well,
I said, what do you mean I don't have following?
Sorry, but since
I have a website. How can I be in business without a website? Without no following.
Since you told
the
story.
You don't have following like these guys. They have this many lists. How's what's your size of list?
Sorry, since you opened up this story.
We'll see who wins that. Who will have the last laugh at the end?
Okay? All right, stop.
2008,
half
of those people, no, 2009. January of 2009, I got a call from Option Express that says, Trey, would you come back in, please, because I left early in 2008. Because the market was getting too crazy, and I said, we cannot really do any advisory options, you know, for third party. We're telling you what to do on email. Things are moving so fast, and you're winner and loser at the same time within a few hours. So it doesn't make sense. We're not doing that. Thank you. We had a very good run. We're going to stop. This was like from 2003 to 2008. So we had 5 years of really good run. We're going to take a breather. We didn't come back until 2010. We stayed out that market for about, probably 15, 18 months. Probably the best thing we ever did. It was just based on decision on vols. Anyhow, half of the people who were competing with me at Option Express on the other trade desk, they were gone by January of 2009. How did I know that? Because they called me. They said, hey, there's nobody on the board anymore. I said, what happened? They said, well, they're no longer in business. You know why? You know what killed them? Marketing cost.
Well, sure.
They were marketing so much, and they had a staff. They had, the graphics people and email lists they would buy. They never pay attention to the trades themselves. They were just huge marketing. So that's going to take you so much. At the end of the day, it's what have you done for me lately? You've got to produce some real dollars.
Farhi, if you're going to talk about this guy, we have to talk about the background just a hair. I'll give you the Cliff Notes version.
Go ahead.
Emma, if you are in the business like I am, which is a registered person, everything I say that I do needs to be documented. Mm-hmm. So that's why.
Of course.
And if I were to say I made 20% last year, which I wouldn't say because I didn't, I'd have to be able to prove it.
Yeah.
Exactly.
But
we publish our equity curve constantly. Constantly.
Okay, what I'm
trade
saying.
By trade, every other trade, every 2 or 3 days, we have to catch up. There's a date and there's a different person in charge, which I cannot deal with. I mean, it's like a checks and balances. You can't be yourself, you know, Fox cannot be checking the chicken coop. You've got to have somebody else checking it.
But the SEC went after this individual person very early in his career.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, you're giving investment advice and you're charging for it. And, oh, by the way, you really need to be registered as an investment advisor.
Right.
And he said, I am not an investment advisor. I'm not any of that stuff. I'm exercising my First Amendment right. I'm just a newsletter writer, and I'm just talking about the market. And evidently, from what the rumors I heard, I never saw the documentation. The thing went all the way to the Supreme Court, and he won. So, in other words, I could drop all my registrations tomorrow, and every morning come on the air and start giving advice, which I don't do now. I could put out a newsletter saying the market's going straight up, and, oh, by the way, you should buy these stocks, that stock, and actually charge for the service.
Here's the other problem, too, with the Internet. There's no way to police that anymore
our policemen don't police.
The cat is out of the bag anyway.
Yeah. But our people who do the policing do a horrible job.
True.
But I'm saying,
I agree.
What happened for Emma, who's here, they became, they're not registered people, so they dropped under the First Amendment.
Look at Madoff.
Yeah, and I could say.
And he wasn't registered either.
But
he was.
Yeah, he was. He owned a clearing firm. But what this guy
the clearing firm was, but not his advisory. Was the advisory actually registered?
It was a hedge fund.
So if he had been registered, then they could get him in trouble.
Right, okay. A brief description is, in order for me to go out and raise money, okay, I have to go to the SEC and I register whatever I'm raising money for as an entity. and I have to have a prospectus, and I have to go out after. There's a lot of hoops you got to go through.
I realize all of that. My question is very simple.
All right, no, but I'm saying, what he did was he went out for sophisticated investors. You don't have to do that.
Of all the people that
you go to see, made $250,000 last year, had $1 million net worth. I don't have to do any of that stuff. You're sophisticated investors. You're big people.
Yeah, don't tell me you didn't know.
Right. And so he went out to get all those people. And people really had a fight to get into his fund.
Yeah.
Because all he did was say how much money people were making. But the weird part was he owned his own clearing firm, so he gets to make the numbers. Now, if you come to PTI, your money's at RBC. RBC's not going to lie for us. Say we're making money for somebody when we're not.
Yeah.
But if we own our own clearing firm, I guess we could pull it off. I would never think of it. But you know, but that's what he did. So these people thought they were making dough. And the whole world is making 7%, and he's making 25%.
Yeah.
And the weird part of it is one of my buddies who's not exactly politically correct, Ferry, he said they knew Bernie had an angle. He used an accent. They knew Bernie had an angle. They knew he was screwing somebody, and they were benefiting from it. They just didn't realize they were the ones being screwed. As long as he was screwing somebody else, it was okay.
Mm-hmm.
But when it turned out it was them, it wasn't okay. And the weird part,
all they had to do is look at the notional value of the OEX pit.
But
there's
no
way you could do.
But how many people? Now wait a minute. Hedge
$65 billion.
If you came,
it was a very very simple. Yeah, as a matter of fact, CNBC called that.
Yeah.
On the day, Mary Thompson.
Nobody's called me.
Says, what does your OEX stuff tell you? Because we used to carry this thing called dollar-weighted volume of all options chains. It's a huge calculation.
Farrah, you're in the business.
There's no way you can hedge.
Yeah, but wait.
I mean, SEC had to do a few things
to figure out that they're being had here.
Big time for so many years.
Wait a minute.
So to your point, and we're getting off the subject.
No, but give me one.
You're absolutely right. They were not watching what was going on.
But okay. What did I just say earlier? They were a hedge fund. Those people elected to not talk to the SEC. This is the part that really frosted the living bejesus out of them.
But they had six investigations of them.
But
if you whether you open an investigation or not is one thing. But once you open it, you better do a good job.
Right. When
I agree.
The whole idea of a hedge fund is you're telling the SEC to not butt in. Why did they investigate them then?
Once they do, they should do a good job.
I understand that part. But I'm saying
that's all.
The people have no right to get SIPC because our SIPC went up. If you're a hedge fund, you're saying, I don't want you guys watching out for me. I'll do it myself. That's what a hedge fund's about. And then at the end of the day, you start sniveling. Why weren't you watching? You're not watching because you told them to butt out.
Yes.
See, you can't have it both ways. Except some people want it both ways.
But same thing for the investigators. If you're coming in to investigate, you can't do it half-assed.
The only way you...
I come from a world of black and white. Either the airplane flies or it's grounded. Very simple.
The only reason why you investigate a hedge fund is for them letting non-sophisticated people in. And I don't think he made that mistake.
Yeah.
I don't. I mean, so I'm saying the idea that those people deserve SIPC... Why?
Yeah, exactly.
It's like me going to a savings and loan, or do even have those anymore, or a bank, where I'm going to earn 1%, but it's covered by FDIC. I'm going to go to, Fari's back garage credit union.
I don't have a garage.
I know, but then you're going to give me 4%, and then when you go out of business, I cry to the federal government, where's my FDIC? Why?
See, I'm in a farm. You heard that.
I heard that. Well, sorry, what's this market going to do? Cut out all the BS. Just tell us what we're going to do.
I think we'll probably... okay, let me give you some weighted answer, okay? Because get adjusted for risk quickly, and we have 2 minutes. Chances are we will have a small bounce, and we roll down further. There's a smaller chance that we'll continue lower. Part of it is sell May and go away. Part of the other of it is that's seasonal. Some of it is China. Some of it is Washington and politics. And then also you look at snaps I had, I think it was from NBC News, that I put on off the TV. Sometimes I get a chance to take a snap of a large TV. I'm watching sometimes in the evening of different stats. It was a comparison of tax benefits of the 2017 tax act versus global slowing down and versus tariffs, you know, the trade wars. The tariffs. Remember, China doesn't pay the tariff. Us, the consumer, are paying the tariff.
No, no, no. That's listen to your president
out there in the Trumpkin land.
Listen to your president. He says the Chinese.
Look at some of the facts. The overall, I'd say 80% chance we're going to go lower. Very small chance we would go sideways, and maybe a little bounce and then go sideways down again.
All right, we're 28.65.
And remember, last Friday we were at all-time high. Don't forget. We're shorting from the all-time high. So not to worry. Listen, we took 61 handles end of a day to end of a day in 2 days. If you took it into a day, it was over 80 handles. That's 800 points in the Dow in 2 days. You put an option, put spread on it, you're walking on water. Jesus has come.
All right, Farhi, so the Chinese, the whole thing blows up. They take their behinds. They get back on the plane. They never come back. Tariffs go up on Friday. How low do we go?
Listen, somebody said China, I think it was Rand Corporation analyst, or maybe it was AEI, actually. AEI, yeah, American Institute, on a Chinese stuff, analyst. It says, listen, not Chinese descent, but Chinese markets and trades. This is a 20-year phenomenon. This is not going to get fixed immediately, and they will not give in this fast. This is going to be protracted, and it's probably not going to work because we're dealing with a president who wants instant answers, instant gratification, and this is a long, drawn-out negotiation. Will be multi-years, and you're seeing it. We get very, very close to the end zone, and it gets pulled back. With that, I leave you. Have a great weekend.
All right, Farhi.
We'll
talk to you next
week.
Talk to you next week. Trade well, my friend.
Yes, SP
Futures down 22. NASDAQ Futures down 76. So what do you think of that, Emma? Really? Interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
We're trying to put all this. When you look at the art of the deal, and you look at, we've got 30 seconds here. We'll talk about it after. But the timing of it, you would think, I hope I'm wrong here, but on the Chinese side, the closer you get to election, especially with a president that's looked at the market as a sort of a scorecard on his presidency,
mm-hmm.
The closer you get to the election, if you were Chinese, you might think you're going to get a better deal.
Yeah.
And I hope that's not true, and I hope they're not thinking that way, but I have the suspicion. As the futures, like I said, down 22. It's the low we've seen it this morning. As the futures down 74. Be right back. Stocks and Jocks, Mr. David Adelman. Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, if they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with John Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen. She's Miss Emma Breen, a guest this morning. Very nice guest. We have some interesting stuff we've talked about, and we're going to talk about some more. Friend of Jay-Z's, Jessica Zalewski, on the board, doing a nice job. We have Mr. David Adelman also in a second. S&P futures, ouch, down 22.50. NASDAQ futures down 75.50. Notable stocks, and actually we've got Chevron is up, which is bizarre, and Disney is up because they had earnings last night. Rest every other stock in the Dow is down, but not by massive amounts. Apple $1.35, Boeing $1.45. They're just all down like you expect with the spooze down, you know, 0.5%. Dow futures down 187. Over in Europe, we're sinking there too, but not near as much. But the DAX is now down over 100. It was down 80 a little while ago. Down 106, that's 0.9%. FTSE down 26.4%. CAC down the most, down 69. That's 1.3%. Over in Asia, sell-offs here as well. Nikkei down 200. I don't think they're part of the last, we keep getting words out of Washington that the trade deal is no good. Nikkei down 200 points, 0.9%. Shanghai down 42, which is 1.5%. 2850, they're the whole number. They were 3,100 a couple weeks ago. Hang Seng down 692, 2.4%. Oil not doing very much, down 30 cents. Brent down 7 cents. RBOB gas, flat. And we've got natural gas, 259. Again, we're talking to David in a second. He wants to get bullish in there. Gold down up a buck 10. Gold cannot get anywhere. Silver down 9 cents, 1476. Copper, again, if you're one of these guys that thinks China goes as copper goes, it's down another 2 cents. 275, so you're getting no encouragement there. Jay-Z, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports, and every day you just say it's raining, for God's sake.
I don't make the rules. Mother Nature's mad at us.
Yes.
Just kidding. She just wants us to have a lot of beautiful flowers.
By the way, Lou wants all the water from here for Colorado. Does he want the mosquitoes too? I'm thinking no.
Maybe.
We'll ship the mosquitoes to see if they like those first. Anyway.
Maybe he doesn't care because he has the type of blood that mosquitoes don't want, you know?
Maybe.
You know how you told me that?
Yeah,
you have the blood that mosquitoes want?
They love it.
Anyway, good morning, everyone. The time is now 7:36. Chicago weather today, mostly rainy. High of 69, low of 43. Phoenix is clear with a high of 91, low of 64. In baseball, the Cubs beat the Marlins 3-2. White Sox lost to the Indians 5-3. And the Diamondbacks beat the Rays 3-2. In traffic, there's a truck stuck under a viaduct on Clark at Lake. Nothing else to report. Back to you.
So where it says 13.6 and your truck is 13.8, you just, the faster you go, the better it works, or what?
Probably.
Yeah, just go fast. You're okay, right? Just slip right through.
How do they get them out?
Well, the first thing you do is let the air out of the tires.
That makes sense.
And then if that doesn't work, you pull it out the same way you went in. Hopefully you're not in too far, or you didn't peel the whole top off, which I've seen actually happen. It's pretty ugly. Hey, David, how are you?
I'm doing fine.
Hey, I got a question for you. A million questions, obviously, I do every time you're on, but
there's a lot of stuff happening.
I know, but I want to zero in on kind of one stock here. And, you know, you don't want to give individual stock advice, but I also want, since we have the two young ladies in here this morning with us, what is the story with this Facebook? Now, this morning, somebody comes out, and now one of the original owners says they want to break the thing in half. They want to do something. Is there enough heat on this company that you and I should maybe avoid it, like the tobacco companies? I mean, are these guys got enough regulatory heat? I mean, what are they really selling? Are there other people's information? Is it something, you know, we're not going to predict where it goes up or down, that we should, like, lay off for our clients, you think, or no?
It's very complex. I can't say that I know every angle on it. It's certainly data. It's monitoring, you know, foreign influences and elections. It's out-and-out privacy, not just data, just exposure of folks' you know, demographics, not only to advertisers but to others. It's monopolistic claims. I mean, as far as dominating, you know, not just Facebook but Instagram and WhatsApp and the like. And I can't answer the question, is there enough heat to force them? I don't know. Could they literally force a breakup where they have to spin off Instagram and or WhatsApp as separate entities? That could happen. Then you have to question is, you know, if that were to happen, are the sum of the parts maybe worth even more than Facebook as a quote-unquote media conglomerate? Those are questions that the market's going to have to assess, and they're going to have to do it, you know, within, you know, the pricing structure.
Emma, you guys,
and I didn't answer the question because I don't know the answer. I have a little bit on the books covered by calls, you know, for full disclosure, very, very little, probably a third of what I had. In that sense, you know, the options are still relatively rich versus the volatility, so I'm not threatened if I have a couple hundred shares on, you know, across accounts, but, you know, I wouldn't expose accounts more to it.
Because I'm curious because you see something like this, that's why, you know, maybe in retrospect, foolishly, I never put people in tobacco stocks. I mean, I'm like...
Right.
I mean, it was really more... Not because they were what they were doing, which I probably should have kept away from, but I just said, you know, how do I explain to a client that I put their money into a stock that has, you know, 100 ongoing litigations? You know, is there anything bad could happen? But a question I have for you, Emma, and Jay-Z, if she wants to pipe in, is if all of a sudden, hope somebody never does, but somebody something bad to you on Facebook and started messing with you, an old guy like me might just say, well, hell, drop your Facebook. Now, how intertwined are you or Jay-Z in? I know DePaul uses it for like meetings and classes and the fraternity. I mean, how could you? I mean, I know people that their kids go to high school and grammar school where they're getting all the
cyberbullying and all
well,
that.
But I'm saying the parents are getting the test scores through Facebook
or
letting you know, if class is going to be late an hour because of the snow through Facebook. I mean, can you disconnect if you're into the, how tight are you? Or how much do you have to be in it because you're in DePaul and you're in this sorority and that sorority and stuff?
Right. I mean, definitely being part of a university and social clubs, like you have to be on it because your group and all your messages are posted there and that's how you communicate. And I suppose you could choose to not be super active on it as just like a social media platform. But there are so many different types of social media platforms. You know, Instagram, Facebook owns, and like everyone is on that as well. And
so
like,
you could never just say, if you want me for a meeting, call me.
Yeah, I mean, I guess
there's
like,
too many people
could,
to communicate
but,
with.
Yeah, there's too many people, and it's just like the main mode of. I mean, even networking for like job related purposes. Like you're on LinkedIn, you're on Facebook, you're messaging people. It's communal messaging too. That's like the most effective way to do that, I feel like, which is helpful in a lot of ways. But yeah, it's. I know very few people that are my age and off the grid in like that context.
Yeah, I don't. So. I mean, I just the thing that kind of slapped me upside the head was with all the stuff last year. Facebook, they're getting fined in Europe, and the guy, you know, all the stuff's going on. They had end up with what 30% higher revenue and 9% more users. It's like the worse they get, the more people use it. Yeah. I don't know if people. I almost have to ask the question, David. How did we manage to make it to the saloon and have a drink with people and make it to class and make it to the softball game with people there? How did we manage to do that without all this stuff?
picked up a dial phone from a handset.
It called somebody's mother and say, "Tell Joe we're playing at 2 o'clock," and she delivered the message. I mean, somehow we did it. I mean, I don't know how we did it, but we somehow did. I don't think it was as efficient. But
and back then we didn't even have cell phones to do text messaging.
Exactly.
No, I mean, I guess my next question is if the university decided, look, there's 200 cases of bullying in the last year, we're off this platform. Could they even do it?
I don't think so. I think, like, it's too big of a operation they have going on. That's all online. And, you know, there's students that don't even come to the university. They do their classes through different various online platforms. And, like I said, there's the community engagement aspect, which just isn't just a part of my program. Like, you have to have internships, any major at DePaul. You're linked in through Facebook and all that kind of thing.
You can't just do it through, like, when we email up the Stacks and Jacks pals, you just put S up there and it goes out to everybody.
I guess you could do it through email, but I think, you know, you're taught that if you stay off of those platforms, you're going to miss out on certain opportunities.
Really?
Like, you're not going to network, you're not going to know, like, you're not going to be able to communicate on a certain level.
So they're here to stay no matter how bad they are, basically.
I mean, we'll see.
The funny thing is that we meet, like, once a week in all these, like, programs that are, like, with so many people and stuff, too, though. But you're right. There's just, like, this level of communication that if you're not on it, like, you're so behind. You're so in the dark.
Yeah, I mean, in our sorority, there's 100 girls that are constantly talking about jobs, you know, selling different things, recommending a hair salon, you know, going to big meetings, telling people to go to this DePaul event, this fundraiser. There's a million conversations going on all at once, from social things to school-related things to philanthropy events.
How about stay away from this Chief and Lou guy?
Yeah.
Stay away from those guys. Stay away from this David dude.
Yeah.
Goes out to everybody. Well, how would that be bad, David, if they put that across the entire campus? Every girl in DePaul knew to stay away from you.
Well, at my age, it's probably it wouldn't take much. They wouldn't probably even need Facebook.
So anyway, so this is we're not on 25, David. I keep thinking that why am I being so optimistic about this? I'm absolutely convinced as I'm rolling my calls up and taking the opportunity to get myself balanced here, where I really thought the surprise this week was going to be to the upside. Now I'm not so sure. This is starting to sound more serious.
Yeah, and yet there still has to be such an impetus for both sides to at least claim some kind of, if not a victory or a soft deal, which is, being frank, what I thought earlier in the week as well, until they, you know, divulged it, you know, 50 or 80 pages out of the 150-page quote-unquote deal were edited. I kind of think that, you know, now most likely, and nobody knows, I mean, it could all be, you know, poker face and, oh, we always had a deal in place and look what we got and it's a surprise and China backed down, no, U.S. backed down, both sides actually move forward. And I mean, that could happen, but I'd say, you know, the chances are very slight right now. But perhaps, you know, one of two things could happen, where at least the market, you know, would get a little bit of a boost, say, either tomorrow or more likely Monday, is that Trump could delay the tariffs, citing quote-unquote progress in the talks. That's one possibility. Or, you know, there was a talk today that, you know, goods and already en route would be exempted. So in the next 10 days or 15 days, goods that arrive would not be subject to the tariffs. And, you know, they could do something like saying, okay, we're going to impose these tariffs now, maybe not to 25%, we'll put 10% on additional goods, and, you know, we'll give a 20-day window, a 30-day window, Xi and Trump will meet in Singapore and really iron out all the differences and come to a deal. So those two outcomes are possible.
I, it just, I think it, everything you're saying is probably true of what other people are saying, and actually what I think, that there'll eventually be something. But I'm starting to lose confidence in that the Chinese care about it happening this week. I mean,
oh, I agree.
I don't think they care about it happening 6 months or a year from now. Their time frame seems to be different than ours.
Oh, definitely. I mean, they play for the long term. They're still, you know, hey, their model is made in China 2025, and by then they will be, you know, in their minds, the world leader in economic, you know, GDP, and, you know, U.S. is a distant second. Great, and whatever way they have to do to get there, fine. And if they suffer a little bit now in the slowing economy, fine. And, you know, I think it really comes down to the basics that, you know, what is a tariff? You know, Trump can squawk all he wants that, you know, $100 billion is coming into the U.S. Treasury.
Which
cost.
It is.
It's baloney. A tariff is paid by an importer at the time that the goods are delivered. Well, that is not China writing a check.
Well, but I think the federal government, sort of like the red light cameras locally, they get used to the revenue and they look at it. I mean, I've got on debtclock.org, we're up to like $61 billion this year. Now, that's a 12-month year or whatever it is, I don't know. But
is that just from China or from Europe, too?
That's total tariffs. So,
okay.
So
that's not $100 billion from China, is it?
No. No, what I'm saying is, I think they're liking the money. And if he can talk himself into thinking the Chinese are paying for it. But if I... Emma, the question for you
but
is...
But who's going to believe that?
Well,
I mean,
obviously
to an extent, you know, I'm John Smith, you know, importer for a Dollar Tree of, you know, wood fans from China. So now the wood fan comes in, and instead of it's 50 cents, it's 55 cents. So that 5 cents I pay. Now, maybe portion of that I can either pass on to a customer where the customer is paying it, or maybe I can negotiate a discount from China. But in no way is China writing a check to U.S. Treasury. So who will believe that?
I'm going to say, how's this for Emma? She's in conflict resolution. That's what her major is, I'm going to try and be non-conflicting here. I'm going to say that based on what he says, Trump's respect for the intelligence of his 30% people that seem to love the guy is pretty low. Because anybody, I really hope there's not an American that believes that. Now, but to be fair, if it's a very competitive commodity coming from China, okay, and if we can get it from 10 different other places, and oh, by the way, there's 50 here, people here to make it, and everything, and whatever it is, it's a shot glass and it costs $2. And you put a 25-cent tariff on the Chinese shot glass, well, guess what? IKEA or whoever is going to say, I don't care what the tariff is. You better cut your price down to $1.75 because
right,
China
right.
could conceivably...
And that's what I said, a discount from China.
They could conceivably eat that. But I'm going to say that out of the 20,000 things that we buy from China, 10 of them are perfectly competitive. I bet they're the sole source on half of that stuff. And it's just going to get passed right on to people here, but you're right. The mechanism is when the ship lands or docks and the stuff hits the floor, the person in this country pays the tariff. And anybody who thinks that the Chinese have paid tariff one or listens to anybody who says that, even if he is the president, I got a bridge for you, and I'll give you a discount on the bridge.
And now the one other factor is that, you know, folks like Under Armour, Walmart, you know, toy manufacturers, you know, Hasbro, and the like. They are, to the extent possible, rapidly moving their you know, sources other places. And to the extent that China loses that, you know, could add as a pressure. I don't think it's quite as easy as saying, you know, hey, we got five and a half more years till 2025, and we're going to make it one way or the other. We don't care. They do care.
Did you ever read the story? Emily, you'll like this. This has to be 8-10 years ago, David. There was a family who said they weren't going to buy anything that was made in China, which means you can't shop at IKEA at all because everything here is from China.
Right.
I'm thinking even the Swedish meatballs are from China, but they made it to May, and then what screwed them up, Emma?
I don't know.
Pretend you're a mother. Weather's getting warm. Kids are out in the backyard.
I don't know, like sunscreen or something.
They promised the kids a little blow up swimming pool.
Oh.
There was not any other blow up swimming pool manufacturer anywhere in the world but in China. And they caved because they promised the kids and they bought the swimming pool. But they made it to May.
Yeah.
See, you'd cave for your kids too. You got that look on you.
100%.
Yeah. See, it's one of the. But so, if you were, I'm going to say 3 or 4 years older, and now you have a job as a lobbyist in Washington, I'm going to say you couldn't run your fanny around Washington fast enough this morning for all these people that are clamoring for waivers, David. What do you think on this tariff? Can you imagine being a lobbyist today? How much could you charge? Because, you know, all these people want waivers.
Right.
Next question regarding specific companies, which you don't do too much. Aren't you, I'm stunned. I mean, I'm maybe not surprised, but I'm, well, I guess I'm, if I'm stunned, I'm surprised. The big alligator in this whole mess between us and China, to me, is the most valuable company in the world, Apple. They're on both sides. They're the Facebook of making stuff there, assembling it there, bringing it in here. Are they immune from the stock is trading like they're damn near immune from this? I don't see how they can be. Now, I have people that have Apple stock, so I sure as hell don't want it going down. But I don't see how, if this war blows up bigger, I don't see how the hell these guys are not affected. Are they so big they're held harmless by both sides? I don't know if I believe that, David. Do you? I mean, maybe it's true. But how do they not come out of this with at least a black eye? If the thing accelerates, I'm not saying.
Well, the stock never did make a 52 week high along with some of the other FANG or MAGA stocks. And, you know, even from the recent highs after a better than expected quarter, which I questioned to begin with.
Oh, yeah, we both
did. You know, has backed off, you know, about 4%, which is about even with the market. And are they immune? No. I guess it's that, you know, one, the diversification, you know, does help them. Not everything, you know, at least the guts of it are not all made in, they may be assembled in China, but a lot of the actual, you know, chips and everything come from Korea and the like. They probably have moved to an extent to get sourcing from other parts. And, you know, I alluded to the effect that, you know, a lot of their subscription business, you know, I mean, they've really, really gone to, you know, a buck a month for this and, you know, $4.99 a month for that and whatever does, you know, cushion them. So while I certainly was not, you know, bullish at $2.11, you know, at $1.95, you know, if it gets there another $7 down, I think, you know, there's value there.
Let me ask you this, and since you ladies are in school and may have been taking a course in this, feel free to pop in because I don't know the answer. Let's just say, David, say an Apple phone costs $1,000. So a carton with 100 of them lands from China, and they've got allegedly a 65% margin. They've had, maybe they're putting some component in it here. I don't think so. What's the tariff? Is it 25% of the 1,000? Is it 25% of the 350? If we get a waiver, is it 10%? What's the number?
It's 25% of the imported cost. So if it's 1,000 and it costs them 350 because there is a 65% margin, 25% on the 350.
Could they drop the 350 down to 100 and say we're going to lose $250 on the thing in China and now we're going to make 850 here and play those kinds of games?
Sure.
Really?
Well, to perk up sales in China and India, they've dropped prices there where they didn't drop. It was cheaper to buy, you know, whatever, the 10 or 10X or whatever. I mean, I have an old 6, but whatever the newest, my 8, you know, the newer models, they dropped prices there, you know, to perk up sales. And I'm not saying it worked to where they were back to where they were, but it did perk up sales.
So the tariff is going to be, it's going to be nowhere near $250 per phone. It'll be 50 maybe or 75 or something when they're done messing with it, if they don't get a waiver. That's got to be so interesting how people do that. Why would you ever believe the price it comes in at?
You know, and there may be a case just because of volume and whatever that Apple, because of the scale and everything, can go to China and say, hey, look, 25% on $350 is $80 or whatever the math is. And, you know, we need to whatever we're paying you for the parts and assembly and whatever, you have to eat 40 of it.
Can you imagine the complexity of this? We got to go, David. Dusty Futures down 29, NASDAQ Futures down 95. I would not want to be the guy to implement this stuff in one day. The complexity has got to be huge. Thank you, David. Thank you, Emma. Thank you, Jay-Z. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit hamzyanalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.